Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. Day two of our committee, February 3rd, 2016. Thanks for your patience as we waited the arrival of some folks on our bill. We're going to start with our public hearing on a little bit out of order on House Bill 4076. Victoria, if you could please give us a summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4076 directs the Office of Student Access and Completion to provide support services to promote success of students in Oregon Promise Program. Takes effect July 1, 2016. That's the original bill. We have proposed dash two amendments, which I believe Representative Johnson is going to describe to us.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson, Senator Haas, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, great to see you. Thanks for hearing us today. For the record, Mark Johnson from House District 52. This bill is, again, about, we had an informational hearing in January about this bill, but it's really about the Oregon Promise, and I've kind of rebranded it the Oregon Promise Student Success Initiative because I think that's really what it's all about. But as you'll recall, the Oregon Promise passed in the last session to extend last dollar tuition waivers to community college, to high school graduates who meet the criteria who go on to community college or career schools and so forth. The interest has been incredibly high. Thousands of students have applied for the Oregon Promise tuition waiver. But you'll also recall, as I mentioned in our hearing in January, that the Secretary of State's report regarding student completion at our colleges last spring was less than flattering. We know that we've got some work to do regarding putting in place proper mechanisms so that students can be served, not just so that they can attend college, but so they can actually get to completion and so forth. So you'll also recall that Senate Bill 418 was passed in the last session and has in it about $6.8 million. That Section 1 of Senate Bill 418 expressly spells out that some of these resources should be considered for how we can help Oregon Promise students be successful students. House Bill 4076, and specifically the Dash 2 amendments, which is the bill, is in direct response to that legislative intent, and it presents a structured framework for investing in student supports. Now, you recall then we had a great informational hearing regarding the AVID program, specifically AVID for Higher Ed, and their success in measurable outcomes across the country and specifically here in Oregon at Mount Hood Community College. And the college president is here today to speak about that. But the plan in House Bill 4076 is to ensure that all community colleges are able to implement student success initiatives similar to AVID. Not to mandate AVID, but to similar to AVID, in order to help standardize the wraparound services in reaching all students. This will help align the academic system across the state, ensuring Oregon Promise students are successful as well as others in the system. And in talking with a variety of college presidents, community college presidents, about our legislative concept, one college president characterized the current system as a patchwork. Not badly intended, but just the reality is that we have 17 colleges and they approach this from different frameworks, and he saw great value in having alignment of efforts. Since he last spoke with you, the language has been reviewed and approved by the Community College Presidents Council. They've also presented to the Student Success Oversight Committee just a week ago, and have received positive constructive feedback from this group, as well as Oregon Community College Association has endorsed our language, and the intent of the bill is clear. So let me just briefly walk through a one-pager just so you understand exactly what's it. And I think this is in front of you, I believe. So the Oregon Promise Success Initiative adds a requirement for Oregon Promise students to complete a first-year experience to remain eligible for the tuition waiver. First-year experience will be designed and approved at the college level. Each college will have a chance to put their own brand on what that looks like. Community colleges will be responsible for notifying the HEC if a student did not complete this requirement. It reappropriates $2.5 million, again, out of that already approved, legislatively approved $6.8 million, for targeted support services at Oregon community colleges to implement student success and completion programs to support Oregon Promise recipients. The HEC will distribute money to the colleges. That's the transaction pathway. Community colleges will submit a request for funds to the HEC, and their request will be reviewed based on these components: demonstrated proof of the program increasing student success and completion, inclusion of both faculty and development student supports. Again, colleges don't have to reinvent the wheel here. If they have something on their campuses that's working well, they can use these resources to backfill, to support what they're doing. Specifically, we know PCC has a great program to play student success and so forth. So this isn't to take that place. They can build with this or use this to fill in gaps that they may have in their student support programs. The language intended to be a targeted investment in student supports to increase completion at community colleges. Again, it's not just about attendance, but it's about completion. Colleges can choose whether to apply for funding. In order to receive money, colleges will have to meet certain requirements that align with the transition from access to access and completion, and are demonstrated in programs such as HABIT, AVID for Higher Ed. The $2.5 million figure is based off of AVID for Higher Ed costs if implemented at full capacity at 20 community college campuses. And I think we showed you that four-year build-out at the January hearing. So we know it can be done for this price tag. That's the important point there. The bill does not require the use of AVID Higher Ed, but AVID Higher Ed elements are the framework for this legislation because of their proven success in closing the achievement gap, increasing student completion, and complementing existing structures at higher education campuses. It's the intent of this legislation to have a relatively equitable distribution of the funds to the community colleges as proposals are brought to the HEC. So, colleagues, this is, in my opinion, it's a very needful action. It's a very minor fiscal utilization of money, but I think for that targeted investment, we can have a huge return on investment that will ensure not only that Oregon promised students will become successful, but this, through their success, I think these components can be benefited by all students on our college campuses. So with that, I will pass it over to my good friend and colleague, Senator Haas.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Haas, please.
Thank you. Mark Haas, Senate District 14. Thank you for considering this bill today. I echo all of that, and I won't be redundant in the information. The success of the Oregon Promise, I think, is critically dependent on this piece of it. If all we did was offer free tuition, I'm not sure it would work, because there is so much navigation for young people to get through the process, and there is nothing more expensive or counterproductive to someone who is enrolled in one of our community colleges without applying. It's counterproductive for the school, it's counterproductive for that student and their family, and it's expensive. This is the piece that helps them figure out what the plan is, and the key, I've always said, to college is to get someone in and out with a completion. And as a parent of a college-bound teenager, I can tell you it's just life is full of deadlines. You know, have you got your thing sent off by May? Did you call Mr. Johnson by Friday? It's just constant. And I know that a lot of young people, hard to get all of these things straight, keep it on their radar, especially from kids that we're trying to help go through. Many of them are at risk and wouldn't even think about going to college were it not for the Oregon Promise. These are the kids we've got to sort of hold hands with and get them through to make it the most efficient expenditure that we possibly can, and this is a critical part of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Johnson or Senator Haas? Representative Gallegos, please.
Yeah, I do. It's not so much a question, I guess, and I might have missed the report, but I'm very supportive of the concept. I don't know if it's a request of the HEC or who it might be addressed to, but it would be great to have a report that would help us to see where the overlaps are, where the supporting structures are. In other words, we've got Future Connect, we've got Aspirations to College, we've got these various programs. How do they basically sort of expand or support each other, that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. I'm just suggesting it'd be nice to have a report or presentation that would help us to see how those things work together.
This gentleman is certainly capable of reacting to that, too. I'll just tell you that that Ms. Richardson is signed up to testify, so she may also have a reaction when she comes up.
Good question.
Thank you.
Representative Hayden, please, and then Representative McKeon.
Thank you, Chair. I had a couple of quick questions on the dash. Can I ask on dash two amendments?
Yes.
At this point, on
yes.
dash two amendments, page three, line lines starting with 17 through 24, but particularly line 21. We're amending this to remove the part that says maintain the cumulative grade point average and inserting meet eligibility requires. But then it goes on to say, unless eligibility requirements is waived by the office according to rules adopted by the commission. So where is the accountability there under this two-part question? That's my first part. Where is the accountability that was my understanding when we first put this project together? And the second part is on page of the dash two amendment, on page four, lines 19 through 22, the commission may adopt by rule the priority by which this grant is awarded. My understanding as we discussed this last session is that there would be, and I don't see it here, some priority giving to veterans and their families. Has that disappeared? Was that a misunderstanding on my part, or are we not going to have any of this geared to helping veterans and their families?
Mr. Chair and Rep. Hayden, to your second question, I don't believe that any preference for veterans was included in the original Oregon Promise as it was written, as we passed the last session. I've subsequently heard some people say it'd be nice if it did, but that wasn't in. This is the original language we passed last session that you're referring to here. So there wasn't any notification regarding veterans or some sort of special, carve out or preference for them. I think the other language in here, probably the commission may adopt rule the priority by which grants are awarded. I think that's if $10 million wasn't adequate, I think that's what that language referred to. And
yes.
I think Bob Brewer is here. That may be what would kick in if, in fact, the $10 million allocation for Oregon Promise students wasn't allocated. The HEC, the OSAC and the HEC could work together to provide some sort of priority framework. But, again, I think that's just, language, again, that was in there. What if? But we haven't reached that point.
Okay,
it's not foreseen that we would. From my understanding, the $10 million is still expected to be adequate to meet demand.
Representative Hayden, I'm wondering if you're recalling something else.
There were some other bills we had.
Yeah, that had to do with veterans, because, of course, to some of our disappointment, the way to make the Oregon Promise pass was to say that you had to have graduated within the last 6 months from high school. So perhaps our veterans here can help me understand. Maybe there is a scenario where there's someone who's a veteran who graduated from high school in the last 6 months, but it seems it would be unlikely, probably. So maybe there's something else we can follow up on.
Just comment.
Yes, yeah, please.
If there was a way to work that out, that would be something that I would strongly support.
Understood.
Rep. Hayden, on your first question, there's a technical change so that this could conform with federal language in order to more efficiently process Pell Grants, and that's what that first thing is. Pell Grant language is slightly different than ours. Ours was you had to maintain a 2.5, mm-hmm. and there are people who could answer this better, but that conflicts with Pell Grant language, which has some other things, and we just didn't want any of the money to get hung up, and so you still need a 2.5 in high school, but the 2.5 would be removed and replaced with 2.0 and some other language to square up with the federal language.
Thank you. Thanks. Representative McEwen, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed. The first thing I'd like to do is thank you both for bringing this. This is such an important idea. It's such an important concept. I think it's a step that's going to help us help kids not only enter but complete and avoid the scenario, Senator Hass, that you brought up, which is the worst-case scenario, which is you start, you don't complete, you end up with debt, mm-hmm. and then you never get caught up again, and reentering is very, very difficult. And I found students in that situation before, and it's the last thing that we want to do. So I'm just delighted to support this. And I also want to comment, Representative Johnson worked closely with me. One of the concerns that I had about the original bill was taking a particular program and trying to use it across a system of 17 community colleges on 60 campuses. And I've worked on a lot of campuses over the years and wanted to, on behalf of some of them who contacted me, make sure that they have flexibility in using the programs that work for them, but have the support financially. financially to take that to Representative Gallegos, that there's there can be a fabric of programs that actually work really well on any individual campus to blanket numbers of students in different ways and to give them the latitude to do that. So I appreciate that a great deal. I want to touch on one other thing that's in the original language. It's not in the amendment, just to make sure that it's clear. And it is in the bill. It's on page 2, line 26. And it talks about the total amount of grant awarded under the section is based each term on a person who is enrolled in courses. You subtract the $50 that they are responsible for and deduct any state or federal grant aid that they get, but it doesn't indicate that last dollar concept where any scholarships that have been awarded also would be deducted from that. And I just want to make sure that we have on record that the indication is that what the state is providing is that last dollar in. And we've talked about that before, but it's not clearly indicated in the statute. So I just want to make sure that the intent is on record, that's considered during when the financial aid officers are putting together these and we're awarding that grant, so we can spread this money as far as we can spread it.
Same thing. Yeah. Other questions or comments? Let's see.
I just want to say how impressive the presentation is, even the coordinated wardrobe of our two legislators. Very nice.
They look good.
The memo.
Thank you, Representative Gallegos. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
I'll just start proceeding down the list of people who have signed up to testify. It doesn't look like there's anyone who is here for more than 100 miles. So that will take us Debbie Durr, Andrea Henderson, and Dana Richardson, please. Whichever order is preferable for you, please.
Okay.
Go ahead, please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson from the Oregon Community College Association, and happy to be visiting you again on this issue. I'd really like to start by thanking Representative Johnson and the work that he did to put together the amendments on this bill, including coming to our Student Success Oversight Committee and talking directly with those from the college about any concerns they might have and making sure that the language of the bill really reflected what works in the colleges. And I really appreciate the time that he took to do that. We are very supportive of this concept and think that really are just thrilled with this conversation about how do we help students complete. We have a lot of conversation in the past about how do we get students in the door, and really this focus and money behind it to help students actually get back out the door too with something meaningful is critically important. So we're very appreciative of it. So we strongly support the $2.5 million for this program, and are very grateful that it's a very flexible program so that those colleges that have something in place that already works can use the money to help expand that and don't have to create something new. So we're very pleased with this. I did want to address some of the technical amendments in this bill as well. So we do have a couple of fixes to the Oregon Promise, and I wanted to address specifically the question that Representative Hayden had regarding the change from a 2.5 GPA to continue eligibility, and we've changed it now to match with the federal standards for federal financial aid. And that's simply a request that came from our financial aid officers and their concerns about creating a separate tracking system and the duplication and the cost to do that, and just to simplify it so they have one tracking system that they can use that's already in place. So we think that will be very helpful. Also, there was an oversight in the bill that students graduating from private schools around the state weren't included, and so there is an amendment in there to make sure that they have access to this program as well. So I'm going to turn it over to one of our presidents, Dr. Debbie Durr, to talk a little bit more about our student success efforts, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Chair Reed and committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to come before you today and to present the experience of one of your 17 Oregon community colleges, each of us dedicated to not only access to post-secondary education, Oh, I will. Oh, just a second. I will, Andrea. I promise.
Okay. It's coming.
She's coming. She's as nervous about this as I am. Dedicated to access in post-secondary education, but also to the support programming and services that will guide our students to success and completion. I applaud you in the recognition that financial barriers continue to prevent many of our students from actualizing their dreams of being productive and self-sufficient members of our communities and our state. I also thank you for the recognition that financial barriers are but one of the challenges that our students face. College readiness and creating seamless pathways from high school to college are equally vital to our student success. And as Andrea reminded me, I am Debbie Durr.
Thank you.
And I am president of Mount Hood Community College. And again, I want to reiterate, I am but one president from 17 wonderful schools in the state of Oregon. And I'm here today to present to you information about a specific student success and completion program. However, I must preface my statements by saying that the strategies used by a community college may be called by various names, but are all based in research and evidence that learning is not a solitary activity. Learning happens when the individual needs of students are considered and success strategies align with the college's community, its student body, and frankly, the resources that it has available. The goal is to support students in the Oregon Promise, to improve the number of students ready for the rigors of college, transitioning directly from high school to post-secondary education. Too many of our students do not move directly into college. Too many of our high school graduates see that transition as overwhelming and unattainable. To move our state forward, we must aggressively address the need for a smooth and seamless transition. The Oregon Promise takes the first step. The second step is the facilitation of that transition and the essential success services that are necessary. The strategy that I bring to you today is a proven student success strategy with over 30 years of clear evidence of supporting student learning and completion. For Mount Hood, it is a philosophy we embrace, but it is also a philosophy embraced by many of Mount Hood Community College's regional school districts. This shared commitment is making a difference in the lives of our students and the knowledge that they can and will be successful in college. At Mount Hood, we have been reviewing best practices with a passion and commitment to improve outcomes for students. In 2011, Mount Hood made the decision to embrace the strategies of AVID, which stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. AVID's stated mission is to close the achievement gap by preparing all students for college readiness and success. AVID's strategies hold students accountable to the highest standards, providing academic and social support, knowing that students who work hard will rise to the challenge. The evidence of AVID is well documented. From modest beginnings, it has now grown nationally and internationally as an intentional, holistic, and systemic program of combining rigorous academic expectations with training in non-cognitive strategies. These strategies teach students how to study, how to manage their time, how to organize their learning and take effective notes, and how to think analytically and critically, all of these being essential elements of college-going success. Our AVID work at Mount Hood evolved. The college identified several ways to provide supports for students at Mount Hood. And as you listen to these, for those of you that are familiar with things like Future Connect, TRIO Student Support Service Programs, other types of achieving the dream, many of these strategies are similar to AVID. A variety So at Mount Hood, a variety of learning community options are offered each term, including coursework in reading and writing, college success, human development, and computer skills. All learning community faculty receive AVID training and employ high-impact instructional practices in their classrooms, in addition to planning together and linking assignments throughout courses. The keystone class of the AVID learning community is the AVID seminar, which helps students build the institutional knowledge and non-cognitive skills needed for success in higher education. This course has become our first experience course at Mount Hood. Each learning community is paired with an AVID learning specialist who serves as an academic coach and mentor, supporting learning community students throughout the term and beyond. The learning community students are also encouraged to seek support through the center that is staffed by learning specialists who support student skill development in the areas of critical reading, time management, emotional intelligence, soft skills, goal setting, note taking, all of those things that we know are essential to college success. Since opening in October of 2012, the AVID Center at Mount Hood Community College has provided 18,500 hours of support to our students through nearly 19,000 visits. Data collected on the AVID Learning Community shows increased student persistence, retention, and success, with term-to-term persistence from fall to winter averaging 80%. That is up from 63% for those students not engaged in these particular learning strategies.
Madam President, as you're turning the page, I hate to break in. I'm starting to worry a little bit about our time, so if you're nearing the end, that'd be great.
I'm almost done. So our challenge here, as Andrea has presented, are resources. And to be able to provide this level of student success, we need to address the fact that these wraparound services are very expensive. So I would support the work of Representative Johnson, Representative Haas. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity today. One of the things that we talk about in community colleges is taking an individual's dream and making that a reality. We are very, very proud of the work that we do. However, to go that next step will definitely take those resources and the flexibility to use them as each college has determined meets their needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Richardson.
Good morning. For the record, Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and just provide a couple of comments with regard to the Dash 2 amendments. First of all, the inclusion of private and parochial clarification around those students that graduate from those high schools in Oregon being eligible for the Oregon Promise is a very helpful clarification for us. I also, of course, want to indicate that we'll continue to work with the sponsor and should you pass it on to the Education Subcommittee on the expectations for us equitably distributing the funds that would be set aside. And then just as a reference, I've submitted the Senate Bill 418 report. As Representative Johnson stated, that was something that you all directed the HEC to convene a work group on over the previous interim to make recommendations about supporting the transition from high school to post-secondary, as well as supporting Oregon Promise students. This was to touch on accelerated learning, among other areas of opportunities. So we did submit those recommendations. We convened a work group of university folks, community colleges, K through 12, ESDs, Department of Education. They met four times, and they did finalize that report. And we are set to present it to the Education Subcommittee on Monday morning. So I just wanted to provide that as context.
Thank you
very much.
I'm
happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for this panel? Representative McEwen, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed. And it's not a question, it's just a comment. I'm thinking for our audience who may not work in this world every day, the term adequate yearly progress is a standard term that is used not only in the federal realm, but also for a lot of scholarship providers. It's very standardized. And so I didn't know if Ms. Richardson wanted to comment on that, but it's something that it is not taken lightly, and it's very clearly defined. Mm-hmm. So going from a GPA benchmark to adequate yearly progress is something that actually makes perfect sense to me. And I didn't know if she wanted to make that, to comment on that, maybe. Yeah. Or maybe we need a financial aid officer to do so. I'm not quite sure. But it is something that's very standardized.
Agreed. And it seems to me that that might actually be a more consistent, yeah. more consistently aligned with what we're trying to do, move towards completion as opposed to a GPA and a course that didn't contribute to completion.
Well said, sir.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Gagos, I'm sorry.
I do have one comment, I think, or question. I do certainly appreciate these initiatives. I still have the question, you know, we've had community colleges since the 1960s. Why are these initiatives not simply a part of the mission of the community colleges to begin with? And like I said, I do appreciate that we're paying attention. We've got to focus on these hard-to-reach students and so on. But again, it's just a question I have.
I guess that
has to do with my other question about it'd be great if we could see mm-hmm. what these programs are really contributing, how they offer a comprehensive approach, and the cost difference. I mean, I think, mm-hmm. again, why is this not a part of our regular systems? So that's just my question.
Don't disagree.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. I need to go a little bit out of order further and temporarily depart from the hearing on House Bill 4076 in order to accommodate Representative Rayfield's schedule. He's patiently waited, so we're going to temporarily depart from 4076. We're going to leave that hearing open and, at the moment, open a public hearing on House Bill 4021. Representative Rayfield, if you want to come forward, perhaps you can give us a summary. We'll hear from you, then return to 4076, and then come back to 4021. Victoria, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4021 requires the state treasurer to conduct a study to assess the viability of establishing student loan refinancing program, declares emergency, and is effective on passage.
And before Representative Rayfield begins, I just want to make sure the committee knows, and we'll have some more conversation about this when we get back to the regularly scheduled aspect of our programming today. The underlying concept here, as you remember, is to explore the options that are available to the state to deal with student debt and student borrowing. We're working with the Treasurer's Office and the HEC on an amendment that will accommodate those needs but be consistent with that intent. But I want to hear from Representative Rayfield before he has to dash off to another obligation. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Rayfield, House District 16. I think really every time I get into folks wanting to discuss this issue, I think we really very quickly need to look at the problem itself. Over the last 20 years, student debt has doubled when accounting for inflation. And what does that do for folks trying to start a family? What does that do for folks that want to buy a house, folks that want to save for retirement? This is a growing problem, really, that is a result that stems from our inadequate funding of higher education. I am one of those folks that cares about this tremendously. I'm somebody that has over $100,000 of student loan debt. My wife has a tremendous amount of student loan debt. In fact, our mortgage payment is less than what we pay every month in student debt. And I have seen personally in my own life how this has been difficult for us to save for retirement, save for down payments on house, look at the future for our son. And you see this story being played out not just with somebody like me that actually is an attorney that has a good income, but you see this being played out for the first time. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York found a study that this is the first time for 30-year-olds that folks with student debt have a lower percentage of home ownership than folks without student debt. And that's interesting. It used to be you go to college, you get a good job, you go buy a house. Now it's no longer that case, where the debt-to-income ratio, the actual money that you have each month, makes it very difficult as far as home ownership and a whole bunch of other things. So we've been looking at ways in our office, how do you really tackle this problem? When we had a bill last session that was unsuccessful, and we really started to, how can we make meaningful impact on this? And we really honed in on interest rates. And what we found is that you can consolidate, if you're an undergraduate, you can consolidate your loans for roughly around 5.5%. If you're a graduate student, you can consolidate your loans for around 6.5%, somewhere around those. And that does change. Now, you refinance your house right now, you're at about 3.5%. And so we had to figure out why the heck is this going on and why the heck can't we loan to our students at these lower rates? One of the issues in talking with banks and credit unions and from common sense, a home loan is something that's secured. So there's security for them. Also, if you're somebody who has a lack of income during a given month, what's the first thing you're going to pay? You're going to pay your home mortgage because you need that house. And so there's a priority of debts that you actually take. Looking at this, the then concept was, well, how do we get this lower interest rate for students? And so there was various ways that we wanted to approach this. And there were two things, and my vision for this is, if we could lower the interest rates for students from 5.5% to even 4% with these debt loads, that is a ton of money in the pockets of folks all across the state. What does that do for our economy? What does that do for retirement savings? It really addresses a lot of long-term issues. It looks at where we have people who are starting out negative $40,000 in life. It allows them to get back to zero, the starting point, and really starting to build up towards what I think a lot of us collectively would call the, you know, the American dream, if you will. So we looked at two different things, and this is why I'm so supportive of this bill, because as you know, we only have two staff people, and we only have so much time in a day and a full-time job on top of that. Any help looking at this is always greatly appreciated, and another set of eyes on this is fantastic. Two of the possibilities that I want to get you guys thinking about is one is more of a public model where we actually invest $20 million and we loan out to students at, say, at an interest rate of about 4%, let's say, to consolidate loans. Once we've gone through that $20 million, we then resell those on the bond market at a little bit of a lower rate of return. So you'd say if we were loaning to the students at a 4-point interest rate, you sell it for about a 3-point interest rate. So that 1-point differential would actually account for the default rate and the administrative costs to administer a program like this. These loans would be something that wouldn't be dischargeable in bankruptcy. You could also require residency requirements so that we keep the talent in Oregon. So if you want to be eligible for this program, you have to stay in Oregon for 5 years. And you can look at all those different variables. These are things that need to be explored. We also need to explore the economic impact of this. One of the other models that I actually really like is more of a partnership between private local banks and credit unions and the state, where the state takes in the application from the individual, and then at that point, only local banks and credit unions can be eligible to refinance or consolidate these debts. The state would back the default rate for the local bank and credit union. So now we have our students who've stayed in the state of Oregon are having more money in their pocket, which gets invested into our economy, save for retirement, home ownership. But we also have all of the profit that is coming from these loans is actually staying in the state of Oregon instead of out of state banks and credit unions. And so we've been working with, talking with credit unions, banks to see if this is something locally here in Oregon, if this is something they'd be willing to participate in. Obviously, the numbers do matter. And so far, we've had really positive results. This is something that is extremely exciting. And so I was very excited when the chair decided to have this bill heard. So, and that's very brief. There's a heck of a lot more to this.
Great start to our conversation. Thank you. Before Representative Rayfield has to run off, any questions or reactions for him?
Let's make one quick statement.
Representative Wisnett, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this. As we all know, that it's approaching $1 trillion. I hope and I appreciate and encourage you to continue to work on the issue of financing it, but I hope you'll join me after 12 years of trying to bring the cost down. The cost is inflated more than anything else in our lifestyle, so the cost is a big factor in this. Thank you. And my daughter-in-law just paid off her loan at the age of 40, so it can be done.
She beat me by age. Congratulations.
Representative, she will certainly beat me.
Yeah.
Really glad you're working on this. I know it's affecting probably half, most of the young people that are working here in this building are faced with this very problem, cannot buy a home, cars, or take exotic trips or anything. Yeah. So are there federal programs that do something similar for reductions, and are you looking at those if they do exist? And
There are certain types of repayment methods through the federal government. That's absolutely correct.
I had this one LA that worked.
Yeah, and I didn't get into, I mean, some of the, you know, there's some other issues as far as how we could be flexible as well in doing this with kind of the our own personal consolidation program here in Oregon. Again, this is a very broad topic. Our intent is to actually bring a bill in the 2017 legislative session, potentially two with two different avenues going down this road.
And Representative Rudin, we can pick up that question in a little bit more detail when we hear from some of the other folks.
Okay. When we do the study.
Complete the rest of it. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Rayfield. Thanks for your patience. So we're going to, again, put aside House Bill 4021. I'll just leave that public hearing open, and we'll return now to House Bill 4076 for the rest of the folks who want to testify. And that includes Joel Fisher, Karen Gray, and Lamar Wise, please.
I came back with, like, $580 a month. Mm-hmm. Is it working for me?
Yeah.
You sat down first. Would you like to start?
Sure. Chair Reed, committee members, I'm Karen Gray. I'm superintendent of schools of the Park Grove School District in Portland, Oregon. Good. And I wanted to start my comments by confirming what Senator Hass has said, that having the money to attend college is one thing, having the skills to persist is another. And it's those skills that we are teaching our kids in high school that we hope will seamlessly go over to the college in order to help students be successful. And while there are many strategies in colleges for supporting student success, the strategy that I want to speak to this morning is the AVID strategy. I know you've had other testimony from other superintendents, but this superintendent hasn't had a chance to talk to you yet. We're a K-12 AVID school district in Park Rose, and we have the only national demonstration site in the state of Oregon. We host over 600 visitors nationally and internationally every year, and we are very proud of the work we're doing in Park Rose. We are the seventh most diverse school district in Oregon and have the highest percentage of African-American school students in the state. And AVID has been an amazing strategy for us. And I'll keep my comments short because I know that you're concerned about time.
Thanks.
AVID for us is an equity strategy. And what that means is we do things in Park Rose through an equity lens, as I know the state also does. Our elective classes are loaded demographically according to our percentages. And because of that, the graduation rate for AVID students in Park Rose School District is 100%. And I don't think there are very many student support frameworks, and this is not a program, it's a framework, that can boast 100% graduation rates. Not only that, they are accepted to college at nearly 100% rate, with over 50% of students getting full-ride scholarships. These are first-time going college students. Every year, Park Rose School District invites a panel of students to speak to the school board to keep them abreast of what our return on investment is for investing in the AVID strategy. And we bring back students from college who are persisting in community colleges and four-year colleges, and they speak to the board about why they are able to navigate and persist and be successful in college, both community college and four-year college. So I feel like this is an important thing for you to hear from us. This is a real-life, every-year experience that we have. I hope that you will support whatever you have to support, multiple systems and multiple colleges, as part of the seamless P20 system we keep talking about in Oregon. And then finally, I would say, while AVID is not the only strategy, it can be tailored specifically college to college to meet the needs of those students there. It is definitely a proven research-based bright spot choice. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Gray.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide association representing members all across Oregon, big and small. We'd like to just commend the hard work of Representative Johnson, Senator Haas, in creating the Oregon Promise Bill and then having the foresight to bring this bill forward. That would help give the supports that students really need, help us get to our goal of 40-40-20, help us close achievement gaps, and we urge your support. Thank you.
There are a lot of people involved in that. Don't forget the whole committee here, too.
There are a lot of other people involved, in, not just the two I named. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wise.
Thank you. Chair Reed and members of the committee, first off, thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Lamar Wise, and I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. So the Oregon Student Association supports the amendments stated by Representative Johnson. The students of our association see the $2.5 million going towards community colleges for support services as a priority for them and for the state. We want to make sure that we are investing our dollars in a smart way to address trending issues that we see at our institutions. We see this as an opportunity to complete the investments that you all made last session. And one of our concerns that OSA had last session was that the Oregon Promise didn't really address student support services. And we think that this gets to that and it gets to the solutions that we were hoping for. So we're glad to see that this missing part is coming to fruition. We would like to thank Representative Johnson for working to create affordable pathways for higher education, and OSA asks that the committee fully support HB 4076.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. The only quibble I'd have with your testimony was, I don't know that this completes it, but maybe continues our investment. And I don't want to let future legislators off the hook on that sort of commitment.
Oh, don't worry. We won't.
Thank you. Any questions for either of these folks? Representative McKeown, please.
I can't let the opportunity pass, Chair Reed, to thank Karen for her good work. I was on the hiring committee in Coos Bay when we hired her for her first superintendent's job.
It all goes back to Coos Bay,
yes,
doesn't it?
It always does. Yes. All roads come through Coos Bay, always. And she was also a wonderful next-door neighbor. And Park Rose is very fortunate to have her, and this is just an indication of the caliber of the people that we have that are doing great work across the state, and it's really nice to have you here today.
Thanks, Representative McKeown. Representative Rudin, please.
Well, I didn't know we were going to do kudos for Karen, but I would also like to just acknowledge her work. She is in a neighboring district to mine. She's always out there in the community. And I also had the privilege of touring Shaver Middle School, and she set that up. And I used to have this fear of going into middle schools because they're at that age.
Used to. Well, that's good.
Well, yeah.
You've overcome that.
But they're in those AVID programs. They are there. They know how to ask questions when I have trouble. What do you do? How to interact with each other? And it's just like this super calm, constructive, delightful place to be. And if they're doing that at that level and then on into high school and community college,
it's good to hear.
Got a winning formula. So thank you for your work.
You said it better than I.
It's a nice endorsement. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you both for being here.
Yes, thank you.
And to steal a phrase from Representative McKeown, I can't let the opportunity pass by. I'd like to hear from PCC. Megan, if you could give us your perspective on this. Obviously, we've heard about, many of us know Future Connect and its effect. So I'd like to hear your reactions to the Dash 2s, please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Portland Community College. And I'd really like to thank Representative Johnson for the Dash 2 amendments, which really allows community colleges to have the flexibility to continue working and expanding evidence-based programming. We feel very confident that the programs that we are implementing fit within the Dash 2, so thank you for that. And I have a high degree of confidence, not only in PCC, but all 17 community colleges, that we take student success initiatives very seriously, that we all are heavily invested in finding the right evidence-based programs for our particular campuses and student populations, and the Dash 2s will allow us to continue that. I did want to add a couple of comments related to implementation. of this, we would highly encourage the HEC to be directed to move with all deliberate speed on this, because, as you know, putting any program in place or expanding programs takes time, particularly when they are very labor-intensive or staff-intensive. The hiring process can take a lot of time. Student success does not begin on the first day of class. Student success begins when someone contemplates higher education. And the earlier that we can begin that work with a potential student and provide them support before they ever even enter into a classroom, we know the higher degree of success we will have. So the quick process, I think, is of the essence so that this can be in place in conjunction with our first class of Oregon Promise. I would also ask that we look at ways to make sure that resources are equitably distributed, which I think is spoken to in the bill. It would be my recommendation that we look to do that through an existing formula in order to not have an RFP process, which can be time consuming. We were sad and disappointed that we actually had to cut Future Connect students this year because we were unable to get state funds because that process, the RFP process, was significantly delayed, and we actually still haven't heard. The RFP did close, but we still haven't even heard. And that, that can happen sometimes. But it is disappointing to have such a tremendous investment in this type of program and not know if we're going to be able to make that available to students. So anything that can be done to expedite the process, we would appreciate it. But we very much appreciate the DASH 2 amendments. We think that that will allow us and other colleges the flexibility, but still continue in our commitment to evidence-based student supports that are really going to move the needle for students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming up. Any questions for Ms. Moyer? See, thank you very much. That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify on House Bill 4076. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Don't see anyone. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4076 and open a work session on House Bill 4076. Representative Johnson, do you want to move your amendments?
Oh, if I could have my script, you bet.
Your amendments.
Chair Reed, I move to adopt the DASH 2 amendments dated 2-2-16 of House Bill 4076.
Thank you. Representative Johnson has moved the DASH 2 amendments to House Bill 4076. They're dated February 2nd, 2016. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? I don't see any. The motion carries. And
Chair Reed, I move House Bill 4076 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Johnson has moved House Bill 4076 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I was going to say by prior reference, but it's not by prior reference because we've just added that. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? I don't see any. The motion carries. House Bill 4076 on its way to the Ways and Means Committee. I think, Representative Johnson, you deserve congratulations and good work. The committee, I think, is by its lack of objection, should not connote its lack of enthusiasm, I hope. We'll all be watching and hope we can support it there.
What I would just say, Mr. Chair, I thank the committee for their attention today and in previous sessions, but I think adding this to the work we did in the last session of the Oregon Promise, I hope we can all feel good about putting in place some really good student-based success initiatives that will hopefully really make a change in Oregon. Addressing the student debt that we heard
right.
is another relevant
and
topic.
We're going to hear more about it in a moment, yes.
And but just completion. It will get kids completed into our workforce without being saddled with that crippling amount of debt. So that's a good thing.
Yep. Thank you for your work. So that takes us back to the hearing on House Bill 4021, which is still open. We heard from Representative Rayfield. I'd like to call up Kristen Dennis and Dana Richardson, please. As they're coming up and getting settled, I will tell the committee that we had a good meeting yesterday with both of these talented folks and put together what I think is an outline for an amendment that will hopefully be returning quickly. I'll let them describe it in further detail, but I feel good about where we're headed. Who's first?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. We just wanted to take this opportunity to indicate that we are working with the chair on some amendments. We totally support the idea of providing students more affordable options to attend post-secondary and driving down some of those rates and the information that we could provide to help accomplish that.
Thank you.
Kristen Dennis, Policy Director in the Oregon State Treasury. I'll just echo what Dana just said. Looking forward to having an amendment to make sure that we're able to. We know that we internally have information that we're happy to share, and then use what resources we can to provide a good overview of defining the problem, and then see what resources will be available to define a next step.
And I think it's fair to say, just to get your reaction to this, that the other point of the study is to have something of a roadmap to evaluate options that the 2017 session might consider further exploration or development. Is that fair?
Mr. Chair, I think that's fair to say. We agree.
Very good. Cool. Representative Gallegos, please.
Hey, can I ask, would this study or report, would it kind of address what I was getting at earlier in terms of really kind of what Megan was getting at as well? If we could identify some of these best practice models that are out there and really begin to look at the cost of these programs, the success rates, because I'm really interested in student outcomes with these things.
Representative Gallegos, my intent with the initial bill is a little bit different in that it's specifically about the financing, not so much about the outcomes. I think you raise a very good point. It's a slightly different question than this study, which will be mostly about loans and debt and financing options as opposed to programmatic things.
Well, can I follow up?
Yes, please.
Then, I guess I think both of those go together, and I can't see separating them. But again, it'd be interesting to see and continue this discussion about what we might be able to garner from this kind of a report.
Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Wizard, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either one of you ladies, did the work group include the banking community and credit union members? And did you talk about federal policy? I thought I've read the Obama administration is looking at reducing rates or has a plan to reduce the student loan rates.
Let me break in just for a moment, and then you can obviously answer too. You may be giving us too much credit as in calling it a work group. It was essentially the three of us saying, okay, what can we do with this bill?
May I rephrase this, yeah. Chair? Will the study group include those people in your work group, and will they look at the federal policy and how that impacts? I'm sure whoever our new treasurer is, that they are very competent, but I concern myself of private, is, this government taking over some of these areas, so.
I would say the intent certainly is to have a broad survey of what's out there.
Thank you.
And I can speak to that a little bit in terms of the financing Chair Reed, Representative Bissonnette. In terms of the work that Treasury would be doing, we want to provide kind of an overview of some of the different financing options. And so certainly that will include us reaching out to some of our banking partners to see what's out there, and then just providing essentially kind of a survey.
And for the record, I'm all for reducing anything can be done to reduce the rate for these students repaying. I just want to be sure that we do it the right way.
Agreed. Other comments? Okay. Thank you very much. So now we'll proceed down the list. Emily Pfeiffer, Jeff Dentz, and Kate Peterson, please. Pfeiffer, do you want to start?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, thank you for taking the time to let me speak with you all today. For the record, my name is Emily Pfeiffer, and I'm a junior at Southern Oregon University. I'm here to talk to you about the possibility of having student loans refinanced through the Treasurer's Office as discussed in HB 4021 and what that would mean to me and other students in Oregon. I was born and raised in Tigard, Oregon, and graduated from Tigard High School in 2013. When deciding where I wanted to go to college, I felt my options were extremely limited because of my family's income status. I come from a single-parent household, so there were financial challenges within my family while growing up. I was always encouraged to attend higher education throughout high school, but it was made very clear to me at a young age that if I wanted to pursue higher education, I would be responsible for paying for it. Ultimately, this led to me choosing to attend Southern Oregon University rather than a larger school such as the University of Oregon due to the significant smaller amount of tuition I would be paying at SOU. Currently, I'm over $15,000 in student debt, and most of my loans are unsubsidized. I'll graduate with over $25,000 of student debt. This constantly causes me anxiety about the future because currently whatever money I have in savings goes directly towards paying for necessities such as textbooks, rent, food, or electricity, meaning I will have no money saved up to begin to pay off my student loans once I do graduate. The amount of debt I will graduate with will hinder plans I have for myself in the future, such as buying a home or starting a family. Having my student loans refinanced would mean I would not have to worry as much about the size of my monthly payments on my student loans, and I would also be able to engage in buying a house more quickly and being able to move around the state to find economic opportunity. Although I do feel extremely limited by my student debt amount, there are many people across the state of Oregon that are struggling with student loans more severely than I will. We know that low-income students are more likely to take on debt and less likely to graduate, and those are the same people that are being priced out of education. So this can cause an enormous strain on their income, especially since they are forced to seek employment without a degree often. HB 4021 is a step in the right direction that would examine the options that we have to alleviate the burden of high-interest student debt on Oregonians. I urge you all to support HB 4021. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ms. Pfeiffer. Dr. Dentz, do you want to go first? Or
ladies first.
All right.
Oh,
thank you. Ms. Peterson.
So good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Reed and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kate Peterson. I'm Associate Provost for Enrollment Management at Oregon State University. And I, too, am here in support of House Bill 4021. In recent years, our staff are hearing from more and more students and their families that they're opting out of post-secondary education because what they perceive is unavoidable, crushing student loan debt. And any programs that we can offer to families that will help them manageable or reasonable student loan debt is something that we definitely should pursue. I would also like to suggest that there may be an additional viable option to be considered as a part of the study. This option would be a state income contingent repayment plan that would, rather than lowering the percentage of interest charged to the students on their loans, the state would provide a match towards the student loan payments that would go 100% against the principal of the loan. Students would only be eligible for the income contingent repayment plan if their annual income was below some established cutoff amount. This, as well as lowering interest on an additional program, would do a great deal to not only make the loans more affordable, to pay off the loans more quickly, and to reduce the total cost of the loan to the borrower. But it also would be reassurance for students that upon graduation, the state would be there to help them be able to stay in good standing on their student loans, avoid default and collection costs. We would also like to suggest that the study work group include representatives of OSAC and the financial aid community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Dr. Dentz.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dentz, president of the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate. We're the duly elected representatives of Oregon's public university faculty. Mounting debt, along with the related issues of tuition and textbook affordability, is stifling the ability of Oregon students to contribute to the future of our great state. A recent study by the Institute for Student Access and Success highlights the vexing nature of student debt in Oregon. Over the period 2004 to 2014, the average student debt of Oregon graduates rose by nearly $10,000, a 51% increase. A commensurate analysis of the rate of inflation over the same time period reveals a 25.4% increase. Hence, the average student debt of Oregon graduates is increasing twice as fast as the rate of inflation. However, this study only tells part of the story. Excluding analysis of the numerous students who have been forced to drop out of college yet confront the specter of repaying their student loans fails to address the profound economic challenges confronting this important and often neglected cadre of students. While statistics vary widely on the average debt of students who are forced to curtail their studies, one study asserts approximately a third of all students fall into this category. It is important to remain mindful of the duress confronted by these economically challenged non-graduates as the legislature contemplates potential solutions to the student debt issue. Providing a policy fix which addresses the needs of these students as part of House Bill 4021 in tandem with policies addressing textbook affordability, et cetera, will greatly enhance the state's ability to reach its lofty 40-40-20 goals. The much-needed reinvestment in higher education approved during the 2015 legislative session, along with the passage of House Bill 4021, are certainly steps in the right direction to address the key educational cornerstones of access and affordability. However, in order to maximize the impact of these policy changes have on student success, a comprehensive policy package may be required. While student debt is firmly in the crosshairs of a national debate over college affordability, the results of the numerous legislative work groups related to higher education emanating from the 2015 legislative session, along with an upturn in Oregon's economy, may provide the basis for a multifaceted higher education policy package during the 2017 session. A thoughtful appraisal of how we can address the stifling issue of student debt and other related issues may highlight creative solutions to address the vexing problem of educational affordability in Oregon. An examination of state-level policies addressing student debt, including Connecticut and Minnesota's recently self-refi program, may highlight best practices which can be implemented in Oregon. IFS is ready to serve on any legislative work groups to be formed as a result of the passage of House Bill 4121 in order to protect the best interest of our most valuable resource, our students. IFS wishes to go on record in support of House Bill 4021 and its dash one amendments. Thank you for your time. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for this panel? Let's see. Thank you. You're all very compelling. We have one more panel of folks on the list, and then I think there may be one other group who didn't get on the list. Tim Cowan, Karen Grady, and Joel Fisher, please.
Fisher already spoke.
He spoke on the other panel.
Yeah.
Get seated. I'm still looking at the clock, so we can be quick. That'll be great. Thanks.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. Very simply, you guys understand the problem very well. Students are being crushed under a mountain of debt. We are encouraging of creative thinking. My father had a saying, if you don't change directions, you're going to end up where you're headed. I think we know where that is. So we are encouraged of looking at what some new options might be, and we think this bill will help us do that. So we urge your support. Thank you.
That's the definition of quick. Thank you. Mr. Cowan.
excuse me, Chair Reed, committee. My name is Tim Cowan. First of all, I think you can reduce the cost of college by looking for reiteration at high school, between high school and college. That would help students prepare for college, help taxpayers, cost, and the amount of time that has to be in college. So look at reiteration. To the bill. I found it intriguing when I read it that it's going to take the Treasury so long to come up with recommendations for you. And as a, I'm sorry. As a result of that, I will walk down the Treasury today and look at what types of things can take place to reduce that time so you can have it. One of the things I wanted to say first was after testifying on Monday, I had a chance to meet Victoria Cox. Excellent representative of your committee. Perfect.
We agree.
So give her credit for that. She provides good adult supervision.
and of something less than adults, perhaps, too.
One last thing is when you take a look at southlakechurch.com, we entered into a partnership with Roosevelt High School, St. John's Community, and Portland School District. We had the greatest improvement in graduation rates. Mm-hmm. And what happens is by getting some of those credits in high school, it prepares them to go to college. Mm-hmm. So take a look at that website, and I think that will answer a lot of your questions.
Thank you very much. Sir, appreciate your testimony. Thanks. And I think we might have Nancy Yule in a group. Please come forward. I think you were stuck in traffic, and so we didn't get you on the list, but glad to have your testimony today, too. Your batting cleanup.
So yes, thank you,
Chairman. Appreciate you being here and sticking around. Thank you.
Thank you, Committee. Thank you for allowing us to testify. I'm Nancy Yule. I'm the Executive Director of Innovative Change. We're a nonprofit community development financial institution loan fund, and we do financial education, small dollar lending as an alternative to payday lending, credit building, and match savings for consumers. So as an expert in consumer finance, we deal with students and graduates who are paralyzed by student debt every day. I'm accompanied by Stephanie San Pedro, who's my staff member who manages our matched savings program for post-secondary education and his individual development accounts, but she's also a certified student loan counselor. So every day she gets to work with folks who are trying to manage their student loans. And we're also accompanied by one of our students and savers, John Dembinski, who's going to share a little bit about his story. So we will try to be brief. We understand that time is of the essence. So, committee, according to the Institute of College Access and Success, what we want to talk about this morning is high-cost private student loan debt instead of federal student loan debt. High-cost private student loan debt is one of the riskiest ways to pay for college. The risk to the borrower is great because it's embedded in the risk of very high interest rates. There's often payment requirements while they are in school, being a student. There's lack of loan modifications, and there's no ability to discharge the debt in bankruptcy court. The risk to the banks who make these loans is low. Because there is bankruptcy protection, the bank can garnish wages or bank accounts for as long as it takes to get the debt paid back. High-cost student loan debts are a regressive form of debt, as private loans typically have interest rates that are the highest for those who can least afford them. Interest rates are based on borrowers' credit rating. Young people and people of low income often lack good credit, and they're charged the highest interest rates, often as high as 11%. High-cost private student loans lack basic consumer protections and flexible repayment options that are available for federal student loans, such as unemployment deferment, income-based repayment, or loan forgiveness programs. The problem is huge. Nationally, there's 30% of bachelor degree recipients in 2012 graduated with private student loan debt. Across the country, students and graduates are burdened with $150 billion of private student debt. Private loans are also prevalent at for-profit schools, with 41% of their seniors graduating with private loans in 2012 alone. I want to finish up by just sharing with you a letter from one of our savers who's burdened with private student loans. She couldn't be here today because she is in school. Her name is Jana Kukla, and I will paraphrase her letter for you. She says, "Like most students, I found it necessary to take out private student loans in order to fund an education. I'm at a school that is one of the best in the nation for the major I'm passionate about. But every day, I become incredibly conscious of how seriously private student loans are going to impact my life. It was difficult to find a lender who offered a reasonable rate, and it was shocking to realize that a loan to get me through 1 year of school would take me 15 years to pay off. While I'm aiming to work at least 20 hours a week in addition to pursuing my studies with the focus and integrity that are necessary for doing so, I'm finding myself increasingly worried that I will not be able to make all my monthly payments. Realizing the amount of debt I will be carrying for several years has given rise to more stress and anxiety than I could have ever possibly anticipated. While I'm incredibly grateful to be able to attend an excellent college, I believe I will become a powerful and independent person. This kind of debt has shackled me and my peers, and it's manifesting itself in despair at times. I realize that many factors go into how education is financed, and I feel with deep conviction that without the student loans that I and countless others are ultimately burdened with, universities could produce more mentally healthy and positively ambitious individuals who'd be able to excel. I'm sure there's a better way to finance education so we can make a living and provide for our families. Realistically, with the current situation, this cloud of debt will stay with us forever." I'd like to turn it over to Stephanie now and then to John to finish up our testimony.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. San Pedro, please.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, I, as Nancy said, I'm a certified student loan counselor, and one of my main responsibilities at Innovative Changes is to coach students and graduates to successfully handle their student
We have this strange requirement, because there are all these people out in the internet who are listening. You have to say your own name, too, please.
Oh,
even
sorry.
Though we know it now,
okay.
The introduction, but please.
My name is Stephanie San Pedro.
Thank you.
So Jason is a client I've been working with for a year now, and he has been working hard to get back on track with repaying his student loans after he went into default. He came to me with a pile of mail from three different companies that were all claiming he owed them for the same student loans and was not sure who he needed to pay. After 2 hours of making phone calls, we identified the correct collection agency that he needed to pay and set up a payment plan. After 10 months of on-time payments, he was able to work out a new, more affordable income-based repayment plan that will help him successfully pay back his debt. However, it has taken him close to a year to get back on track, and he still has 25 more years left to pay his loans. In our last meeting, we called his student loan servicer and learned that his new interest rate was about 5%. Based on his current balance and interest rate, we inquired about how much that interest would be that he would be paying monthly. Right now, it's $88.35 a month. So in the 25 years that he has left to repay his $36,000 in debt, he will spend $27,000 in interest alone, and this is all for an associate's degree. Jason's case is like so many students in Oregon struggling to afford their higher education. The good news for Jason is that his interest rate could have been a lot worse. If federal and state student aid is not enough to cover the cost of attending college, many students turn to private student loans from banks and credit unions. These loans have variable interest rates and take a borrower's credit into account when calculating an interest rate. Many students have no credit history when they apply for a private student loan, so the bank charges them a higher interest rate. Excuse me. The interest begins accruing as soon as the loan starts and requires a student to make payments while they are enrolled in school. When a student of low income attends college, they are doing the most impactful thing possible to break the cycle of intergenerational poverty. And they often do it alone, as their family does not have financial means to help them. They may want to work, but schoolwork, the need to get through as quickly as possible, and lack of flexible places to work can make working pretty impossible. As a result, many of these students turn to student loans as a way to make ends meet. If a student is not working while in school and has no family to support them, the student loan is essentially setting them up for default. Financial institutions do not offer income-based repayment plans like federal loans, and they do not have to work with the borrower to find a realistic and affordable monthly payment. There is no escape from private student loan debt, as it cannot be discharged in bankruptcy. There are no sliding scale repayment plans, and in the event of the borrower's death, the debt does not necessarily go away. These students I work with are grateful for the opportunity to earn their degree and want to pay back their debts, and can do so if they were given a more affordable payment plan. This is why a state program to help students in Oregon take control of their finances and take pride in paying back their student debt would be a great solution to the growing problem of private student loan debt. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Dembinski, thanks for waiting. Glad to hear from you.
A pleasure. Members of the committee, as I said, my name is John Dembinski, and I'm here to advocate on behalf of all of my fellow students who want to be productive members of society and not be burdened by tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt for the crime of pursuing our passion and pursuing our education. I will note that I was very well educated on the cost of risks and debt. I possessed informed counsel from parental and non-parental sources, a comparatively clear path to my short-term goals, which was to be a licensed EMT and then attend paramedic school, both of which I attained successfully, and my long-term goals of practicing as an emergency physician, which is still in the future. And I will note that if every piece of debt I possessed was assured at the same level of protection as the public debt I've accrued, then I'd be in a vastly different set of circumstances. But even at where I am now at Portland State University, PSU, the amount of subsidized Stafford loan I can accept, which is the ideal loan, only begins accruing interest once I've graduated, covers six semesters out of the estimated 4 years required to graduate, which is nowhere near sufficient, which is where private loans come in. Private loans and then work and grant outside of that. And it's very much a negative feedback cycle. If I don't have enough in debt, then I have to work, which degrades academic potential and performance and can result in a longer term and more debt accrued. It's just a cycle that repeats itself and benefits nobody. It does not benefit the student. It doesn't benefit the institution. It only benefits the loan holder and is detrimental to society. Obviously, I'd love to see a situation where not only are we not penalized for educating ourselves and for advancing our place in the world, but we're incentivized for it. And maybe that'll come further down the line. But I'd just like to note that if the current rates of private debt and accrual continue within the next 15 years, it's estimated by the Department of Education that private debt will exceed public debt. And at that point, education essentially becomes a plutocracy. The only people who can afford to go are the ones who don't need it, who have the wealth that can already exist in the world, and those of us who want to advance our place and provide care to the world around us have no ability to do so. So this is only one step out of many, and I'm only one of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of students who are asking for assistance just because we want to be out in the world, we want to pay off our debt, we want to do good to those around us, and all we're asking is just for it to be a little bit easier.
Thank you for your testimony. It's a sobering picture you paint, but also really helpful to hear your direct experience. We appreciate it. Any quick questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. And I misspoke a little earlier. There is one more person who has patiently been waiting. She'd sort of hit on another list I missed. I recognize our time is very short, so those of you who have other obligations, please feel free to go. I'm committed to staying and hearing from Dee Wilson from PCC. If you can spare a couple more minutes, I know she'd be grateful to. Thank you, Representative Wilson. My apologies. There's two different lists I'm managing here, and I missed one. So
no problem.
Please.
Chair Reed, Vice Chairs Gallegos and Wisnett, and members of the committee, thanks for having me. For the record, my name is Dee Wilson. I serve as the bursar for Portland Community College. For those of you who don't know what a bursar is, I handle all of the student accounts and revenues for the college, and I also am the treasury manager for the college. So I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 4021. You all heard a lot of very compelling evidence about why House Bill 4021, the study, is so important. And I'm not going to talk to you anymore about the burden of debt. You know what that is. But I want you to know that PCC is a very enthusiastic supporter of any conversations exploring various paths towards alleviating this burden. We think House Bill 4021 has some really exciting possibilities. In my position as the bursar at Portland Community College, I have firsthand knowledge about how hard it is for students to pay their debts. I'm the bill collector for the college. I see a lot of students who come in who can't afford to come back to school because they have debts that they can't afford to pay, or they postpone their education, and it's a shame. Fortunately, we have Future Connect and other grant programs that help students with their education, and we've soon got the Oregon Promise, which is going to help a small number of our students. But even after all of the money they get in grants, the free money, there's not a lot of leftover to pay for housing and day-to-day living expenses once they take out the cost of their tuition and books. I wanted to share with you information about financial aid. Our financial aid director was planning to be here, but he had an emergency. He's in support of this bill and sends his regrets. But he wanted me to share with you some of the statistics around the financial aid that we issue at Portland Community College. For example, PCC's loan volume for last year, 2014-15, was $91.9 million. 61%, that represents 61% of the total aid packages that we provide to students, grants, scholarships, things like that. The types of loans we provide are federal direct subsidized and unsubsidized loans, parent plus loans for undergraduate students, and private non-federal loans and nursing student loans. On average, the college awards 18,539 students each year for an average loan amount of $5,500. Our loan default rate is 17.2%, which may seem high, but on the state average, on a national average, it's lower. These high loan totals underscore the seriousness of the financial needs of PCC and your constituents throughout Oregon. The national debt level, as you surely know, now exceeds $1.3 trillion. PCC leaders understand the importance of managing our student loan debt, and I'm proud to say that through strategy, planning, and a whole lot of hard work, our default rate is now 1.9% below the national average and one of the lowest in the state of Oregon. 4 years ago, our rate was above the national average, so this work has paid off, and I'm proud to say that our commitment continues to be very strong in this area. PCC leaders also understand the weight of student loan and its role in non-completion. Many of our students postpone their education to go back to work so they don't have to take out as much debt. And that's, you know, that's a sad statistic. The more options that become available to help our students juggle their loans as a reasonable portion of their personal budget, the more successful they will be in graduating and completing certificates. Moreover, I wonder whether the results of this study could eventually provide incentives for Oregon College graduates to remain in the state as they build their careers and serve in both urban and rural environments. As the national climate is shifting towards less attractive loan programs, as we heard eloquently spoken just a few minutes ago, our students could find state repayment options to be the security they need to complete their educational goals and contribute towards the state's 40-40-20 plan. For these reasons, PCC supports House Bill 4021. Oregon has been a leader in conversations around rethinking the cost of higher education, and this is the opportunity for our state to move even further. Thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer those for you.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate your patience. I hope you will not take people's departures any indication of anything other than the challenging schedule we're all managing while we're here.
I understand completely.
Thank you. And just to close the note again before we close the public hearing, we're working closely with the Treasury and the HEC to get the language right. We expect to have that back in an amendment and to move it forward. Thank you, Representative Gallegos, for hanging out with me at the end here. I'd close the public hearing on House Bill 4021, and I don't have to look up in that. Do you have anything else for the?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're meeting again Friday.
We don't have agendas posted.
No meeting on Friday. We expect next week once we have the rest of our.
Is that true for the rest of the day, too?
The rest of the day? I can't. Yes. I'm not responsible for the rest of your day, Representative Gallegos, but we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Adjourned. Thank you.
Close for Monday? Sure.